chromosomes. Little strands of nucleic acids and proteins are the fundamental genetic instructions that tell us who we are at birth. Most people are born with 46 chromosomes, but each year in the United States, about 6,000 people are born with an extra chromosome, making them a person with Down syndrome. If you've ever encountered someone with Down syndrome, you know that they are some of the kindest, most joyful people you will ever meet. They truly have something extra. My name is Lisa Nichols, and I have spent the last 24 years as both the CEO of Technology Partners and as the mother to Allie. Allie has something extra in every sense of the word. I have been blessed to be by her side as she impacts everyone she meets. Through these two important roles as CEO and mother to Allie, I have witnessed countless life lessons that have fundamentally changed the way I look at the world. While you may not have an extra chromosome, every leader has something extra that defines who you are. Join me as I explore the something extra in leaders from all walks of life and discover how that difference in each of them has made a difference in their companies, their families, their communities, and in themselves. If you like this episode today, please go to Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen and leave us a 5-star rating. I'm excited to have Dennis Bosiger on the show today. Dennis is an executive, pastor, and author. Well, welcome to the show, Dennis. It's so good to have you with me today.
Great to be with you, Lisa.
Thanking you so much for just making the conversation. I'm really excited about our conversation. And I have to give a shout out. You know who I'm going to give a shout out to our mutual friend, Jim Bechtold.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Jim is he's the Cincinnati blessing right there, all in one.
Well, I mean, he is a blessing all over. I had a meeting this morning with a CIO friend of mine, and I was just telling him about Jim. I said, I call him my CEO. He's my chief encouragement officer.
Yeah. Yeah, you bet.
He's just
And amazing. I love how every email's got capital YOU. You are a blessing.
I know. He is an encourager. He truly is. And Jim, I can only imagine what it was like, truly, Dennis, to work under him when he was at P&G. He just had to have had just a magnanimous effect on people and the people that he worked with.
He sure did. And he's kept right on with that and doing some significant kingdom work with, the church that he helped found here in Cincinnati, Crossroads, and the CEO Forum, and just his network of relationships. So I'm glad he put us together.
I'm glad he did too. And I cannot wait to dig in. But, just for our listeners' sake, Dennis was a marketing executive. He was VP of advertising at P&G. He was there for 22 years. And we're going to talk a lot about this, but he pivoted at one point, went to seminary, and then was the pastor of a church there on the outskirts of Cincinnati. He's an author, a disciple maker. And we just have a lot to dig into, Dennis, but I would love, before we do that, for you to take me back to the beginning about how you grew up, because you didn't grow up in the States. Where did you grow up?
Yeah, right. I grew up in Canada, was born in the eastern province of New Brunswick, lived in Ottawa, the nation's capital, and then did high school in Toronto, and then university at Queen's, which is halfway between Toronto and Montreal. And joined Procter & Gamble after graduating from undergraduate business school. And there, I met my wife, Mary Ann, who is an MBA grad from another university. And we got married 43 years ago and had two of our sons in Toronto. And then the third son was born in Sydney, Australia. The baby, Mariel, our girl, was born in Kobe, Japan. We then moved to China and then Hong Kong, and then we moved to Cincinnati with Procter & Gamble. We're still in Cincinnati. So we've got the four kids and now 10 grandchildren with two more on the way.
Two more on the way. Last time I talked to you, I think it was one more on the way.
Yep.
You are a blessed man. You are rich in ways of relationships, aren't you, Dennis? You know?
Oh, man. The Lord has really brought Psalm 127 and 128 to life in my family. And I am truly blessed.
Well, it's
amazing.
We're going to talk about all that. We're going to talk about your career ascent at PNG. But, you know, I know that you grew up with three little sisters. I'm sure you were really a good big brother. Were you a good big brother or did you terrorize them?
Well, probably until about age 12, I probably terrorized them. And then I started going away for the summers and to summer camp. But yes, my parents both passed away young before they reached the age of 60. And so I ended up really, you know, loving and stepping into the role of big brother. And, they all three of them were just so special to me. And, two of them have already passed from cancer. And so now one did not have any children. The other has one son who's a beloved nephew of mine, and I stay very closely in touch with him. And then my baby sister, Michelle, she is still living, but she was just diagnosed with stage 4 lung cancer.
Oh, my goodness,
so
Dennis.
We've had a rough go of it, but... I will say this, I had the privilege of introducing all three of them to Jesus. Uh-oh. And I know from their faith and their testimony that one day we will be reunited. Amen.
Absolutely. Yeah. Wow. Well, I did not know that. That's a lot of loss. That's a lot of loss. And you probably know without that hope of eternity, you know.
Right.
It would be terrible. It'd be terrible.
It would be.
But I would love for you, though, Dennis, I'd love for you to talk about your mom a little bit, because I know she was a huge influence in your life, and especially around this idea of education. I mean, she truly believed education was the key, right, to the good life. You know, we'll talk a little bit about the good life. But, you know, I know that you say she herself didn't even have an opportunity to have anything past a high school education, but she really was focused on that for you and your siblings, you know, and education was really important to her.
You bet. My mom was so special. She was, first of all, really celebrated being Irish. We learned about our heritage from her and our French heritage from my father's family. But she... she would literally go through our homework. And if we were doing sloppy work, she'd literally rip the page out of my composition book and say, okay, we're going to try this again. And it was always encouraging, but it was like super high standards. And I think for her, that was her love language. Her love language was to give us the acts of service and the words of affirmation that would keep us focused on our doing our best, you know, doing our best. And that was the mantra. And she knew that education was the route out of the poverty that, you know, she and my dad had experienced. So at the bottom of it was this undying love. Mm-hmm. She would speak to us about how smart we were, about how hard working we were. She would call out our strengths, and I think really that was the foundation that gave me a shot at the good life.
Right. I remember reading that, and you said really it was her fierce love and acceptance and speaking those things into you that really gave you a chance at the good life. You know, I know, Dennis, from reading about you that you love philosophy. You were reading philosophy, you know, at a young age and reading great works from the greats. But in the book that you recently wrote, we're going to talk a lot about that. I was so fascinated by this, but you quote George Valiant and in his book, The Triumphs of Experience. And And I was so fascinated by this. You said he conducted a study for about 55 years where the researchers measured the components of a flourishing life. You know, and some of those components would be physical health, of course, income, quality of marriage, relationships, achievements, emotional health, such and such. But what he concluded at the end of that study was in early childhood, if you had at least one loving parent or a relationship, it could be a grandparent even, right? That was a great predictor of the ability to thrive. And so, you know, I love what you said. Thriving does not really require an idyllic home life. It's one parent or one grandparent or one relative, right? And probably what you are to your, even your nephew now. But to me, and, you know, I think this would be an encouragement to our listeners. This is an encourage. That's very encouraging. It gives you hope, right? And also gives you a higher responsibility, I think, as a parent, you know, to say, you know, just one loving parent.
Yeah. Yeah. That study really, really made a huge difference in the way I was thinking about parenting and grandparenting. And, you know, he, this study, by the way, is still going on. It began in the mid 40s with 200 and some odd 260, I think, Harvard sophomore and juniors. So included in the first batch of the study was John F. Kennedy and a number of other people that, you know, became well known. But the study has continued, and George only ran it for, well, he was the longest serving director, 55 years, but there was someone, there were several before him and several since him, and they've continued to turn out incredible evidence. And they're now studying the descendants of those first batch. And they're it's the longest running longitudinal study of human flourishing that has ever been done. And it's that book is worth gold,
right,
in how to think about parenting, grandparenting, and, you know, like you said earlier, the good life. So
I'm just thinking to myself as we're talking, I'm thinking that needs to be a book that we buy for every young parent. Right? And I mean, no home, I don't care what home you grew up in, no home is perfect. Right? But if love is there and acceptance of the children and like your mom speaking these attributes into you, Dennis. Gave you a belief in yourself that maybe you would not have had had she not been that way.
So absolutely.
Well, let's talk about, you know, you did go to Queens, you got a Bachelor of Business Administration with an emphasis in management marketing, but then you did start at P&G right out of college, and you talked about meeting Mary Ann, and I'm thinking to myself, so it's, you were already at P&G and Mary Ann came in to interview, and at the last minute you were the substitute dinner date for her. I remember, so I remember those days of interviewing it at Greg and I both started our careers at McDonnell Douglas, and how, you know, they would take you to dinner and this sort of thing, and you were the substitute dinner date. So aren't you glad?
Oh, man. I was paying no attention to Jesus at that time in my life. I was as far gone as you could be. And in his kindness, he puts Mary Ann into my life. And, you know, she was a decorated track and volleyball athlete. She was a president of her class in her undergraduate in phys ed. She was president of her class in the MBA school. She was in between undergrad and MBA. She was Miss Canada for a year, traveling around the world representing Canada. She had a 4.0, you know. And when I met her, oh my gosh, Lisa, she was the most down-to-earth, humble, approachable, unaffected person I'd ever met. And I'll tell you what, I knew I wanted to marry her in 40 minutes. I mean, I had all I needed in 40 minutes.
Yeah.
She was so amazing. And, you know, that character, that character, you know, has just continued to blossom, and she is now just the most amazing. I think your grandma name is Yaya. Hers is Mimi.
Mimi. Well, yeah, that's our grandson's other grandmother is Mimi. So I couldn't be Mimi. So I'm like, I'll just be Yaya.
Yeah. But no, what an incredible gift from the Lord to just, yeah. And it took her a while, maybe about 9 months. And then she started realizing, okay, this is good. Much to my relief.
Yes. Well, you know what? I'm just thinking as you're talking, Dennis, you said you didn't know Jesus at all. Then you weren't chasing Jesus. But here's what I'm thinking. Jesus knew you.
Yeah.
Well, and he was probably certainly knew that she was the woman that you needed
right
in your life, which is so gracious, you know, such a gracious
right.
God.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, it's part of that, you know, how I felt the hound of heaven. I felt like I was in his tractor beam, especially in the 3 years leading up to really knowing, you know, who he was. So yes, I think he really does woo us in amazing ways if we're paying attention.
And oftentimes, you know, these things happen and then you look back and you can connect the dots and say, oh, okay, I see that he was there, even though you maybe were not faithful, you know, to him during the time. But, you know, I want to talk a little bit about your career ascent, because I think it's very, very critical to know kind of where you know, what you were aspiring to, Dennis, and how you were just continuing to move up the corporate ladder. You had so many opportunities. Continue to get promoted, continue to, you know, really your career took you around the world. Like you had mentioned before, you guys lived in Japan, you lived in Hong Kong. I mean, you went around the world. I think when you were made a vice president, it was the youngest in the history of P&G. You were 34 years old. So, but can you talk about really, I would love for you to talk about, first of all, I'd love to know, like, then what was your leadership style when you were going through all of this? And, you know, tell our listeners just a little bit about your career ascent.
Okay. I discovered when I was 12 years old at summer camp that I had the gift of leadership. It was called out to me by the camp director because in the final relay Olympics of the Olympics, I put the best runners on the hardest part of the course. There's a giant hill in the middle of the course. So usually you put your best guys at the end and they can win the, win the glory. Mm-hmm. But I put the best guys on the hill, and we destroyed the competition on the hill. And so the rest of us were just ordinary athletes, and we ended up winning. So when I went to P&G, I'd already had a lot of leadership experience at McDonald's. And my owner operator at McDonald's was in the packaged goods business before he got his first McDonald's franchise. And while I was in college, he went from 1 to 5 stores. So I grew through that with him, and he taught me about marketing. And he said, you need to work at Procter & Gamble. They're the best. And so I applied there. And at that time, I didn't really know. It wasn't a well-known company. It was known by its brands. So yes. You could go into a supermarket and you could see, oh, one company makes Tide and Cascade and Pantene and Duncan Hines and Folgers and Jif. And, you know, you realize, wow. And the attraction was that in 2 to 3 years of training, you could be given the responsibility to run a brand. And it was a really a combination of, you know, entrepreneurial opportunity with corporate horsepower. Mm-hmm. So I went there, and my first assignment was Pampers. And my first weekend, I was asked to go to Ottawa to a baby fair. And I spent the whole weekend talking to pregnant moms and moms with babies. And as a 21-year-old guy, I probably changed 150 diapers that weekend. demonstrating how Pampers worked. And you know, it was in the days where 90% of diaper changes were made with cloth.
Right.
So this was a new thing, and I learned so much. I came back, and that became the defining methodology of my leadership, was to know the consumer better than anybody in the company, to know what they loved, what they wanted, what they hated. And that became kind of my MO. And I believe that's why I did so well, is because mm-hmm. I was kind of the internal champion for the customer.
It's a great leadership lesson right there, Dennis, right? We still need to, our customer, if you're not providing what your customer is asking for, right. You know, you're probably not going to be providing a service for very long or a product for very long. So yeah. that's a great leadership. So really you kind of, you know, cause you, I think you, yeah, I don't know all the different brands, but Tide and Pert, I think, didn't you do Pert?
Yep.
You know,
yep. The shampoo, first two Pert, in one shampoo. Mm-hmm.
First two in one shampoo. I mean, that's probably, you know, that's really a great leadership lesson.
Yeah, you have to be curious and keep digging mm-hmm. and keep looking for that insight that will help you set your business apart.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but let me talk to you about this because, and this is no secret. I mean, you talk about this in your book. We're going to talk about your book, The Biggest Idea, here in just a minute. So, Dennis, I mean, by the world standards, you're flourishing. You're flourishing at work. I mean, you are just climbing the corporate ladder, but you're also working about 80 hours a week. And tell our listeners a little bit about what was going on inside of you during this time.
Yeah. So, you know, as I continued to grow, you know, there were so many amazing blessings. You know, first class air travel, lots of attention at conferences, lots of attention in company meetings, lots of just privilege. And it went to my head. And I think what subtly started to happen over time was I succumbed to selfish ambition. And selfish ambition led me to be more difficult to work with other divisions and other people in the company. It led to self-centeredness. It led to being an absentee father. It led to being unfaithful to my wife. And so as much as the blessing and the success, and I, you know, continued to do the same thing with consumers and the same thing with people that were on my team, but it was that just gradual destruction of my character because of selfish ambition.
Mm-hmm.
And it was then, you know, that the Lord in his mercy, you know, put me into the middle of this powerful earthquake in Japan, 7.2 in 1995. And it decimated my business. It decimated my house. And it showed me that I was really hanging on to that stuff, and I had lost my way. And it got me thinking about the questions of life
mm-hmm.
and what am I doing here? What's my priorities? And that's when I really began seeking, mm-hmm. you know, for truth and for real purpose.
Yeah. And I want to talk all about that. We're going to take a quick break and we'll come right back. But Dennis, as you're talking, it just makes me, I've got a friend, you may know Dr. Tim Irwin, has written a lot of books, Extraordinary Influence, Impact, he's written a lot of books, but he did this study of executives in particular that had really grown to the pinnacle. And the same thing, and what you said, I think is so important for us to understand, it was not an overnight thing. It's subtle and it's a gradual thing. Like a slippery slope, really. Mm-hmm. And Dr. Irwin talks about there being cracks in our inner person. And the enemy knows where those cracks are. And we'll get in there, and pride and all of that can come into play. And, you know, his second book, I think, or maybe his first book, I may be getting it wrong, but it was called Derailment. derailment and about the study of how many had been derailed. But fortunately, God in his mercy pulled you out of that. And we're going to talk about that, but we do need to take a quick break and we'll be right back on the Something Extra podcast with Dennis Bosiger.
Hey there. In a challenging business climate like this, savvy leaders look to technology to find an edge. This can mean the difference between staying ahead of the curve or playing catch up. It's time to collaborate with the highly skilled experts at Technology Partners. Our team of technologists draws upon decades of experience for your project, with each bringing a passion for solving problems and a track record of success. How can we help you overcome your biggest technology challenges? Visit technologypartners.net to book a free consultation with one of our leaders.
Well, welcome back, everyone, to the Something Extra podcast with my friend Dennis. So, Dennis, you kind of laid things out for us a little bit, and I love what you said. You said that you really stepped back and you started doing this audit of your life. What am I doing? Why am I here? Are my priorities what they need to be? You start asking these questions. How important is it for us to take the time to ask those questions? And a lot of times we don't, right? We just keep going. Thank God you had that event happen. It's a terrible event, but God used that for the good to really make you stop and think, what am I doing with my life?
Yeah. Yeah. You know, one of the influences was the book, The Road Less Traveled by Scott Peck. And it is that, you know, the old saying, the unexamined life is not worth living. Mm-hmm. And that was my situation. Scott Peck really helped me see what some of the issues were and primarily the lack of a spiritual life. And I started reading much more, way more. I became a reader during this time. And then all of a sudden we were moved to Hong Kong. And I was given this new assignment, and our church, and by the way, I was going to church. My wife and I thought, since the beginning of our marriage, we would go to church, be great for the kids. And the difference was she had had an encounter with Jesus when she was younger, had never really been discipled, but over the course of our time in Australia and Japan, she got into a very deep Bible study and realized that I didn't know the Lord. So she started praying like crazy. And then one day, this lady in church stands up and says, there's this retreat. It changed my life. And I'm thinking, I'm exhausted. I need a retreat. That's exactly what I need. I have no idea what a retreat
what it was.
Is. I had no idea what was going on.
Right.
So I sign up for this retreat, and it's this amazing weekend where a team of business people came from the United States and led this retreat all weekend. And I heard stories of guys sharing how their life was messed up, how they were unfaithful, and they were like reading my mail, you know, and how they had encountered Jesus. And it wasn't religious. It was very intimate. And I got an introduction to Jesus through the Spirit, the Word, and the testimony of these men that were leading this retreat. And then their wives led a retreat for the women the next week. And I just had this awakening, like, oh my gosh, this is not about performing for God. He's already done this for me. He's already died for all my sins. And I'm thinking, why have I never heard this before? It was almost like, and that night I went out and I went for a walk, and the presence of God just completely overshadowed me. And I felt the Lord behind me, reaching around, pulling out of my chest what I call a 60-pound rock, probably my sin, my hard heart, whatever. And I was transformed. Mm-hmm. I knew that I was forgiven. I knew that I was loved. And you know how you know something in your knower, you know?
Yes.
That was the experience. I can't say it any clearer than that. And from that point on, I just experienced an entirely new life, an entirely new set of priorities. And it was from that that the Lord gradually led me into understanding the Bible, gradually led me into understanding how he had wired me. And, you know, I talked to Marianne about 2 months in. It took me about a couple of months to just process what happened. And I told her everything.
Mm-hmm.
And I asked for her forgiveness. And I was wrestling, you know, do I just get this off my chest and now I wreck her? Do I do this? And what are my motives? I really am always thinking about my motives now.
Mm-hmm.
I'm very cautious of selfish ambition. And anyway, it was clear from Genesis chapter 2 that the Lord wanted me to confess to her. And I did. It was a spirit-filled moment. And she looked up at the sky and we were outside and she just said, she looked back at me and she just said, well, God has forgiven everything I've ever done wrong, so I forgive you. And that was kind of the human manifestation of the gospel of the kingdom, that what I was reading about, you know, in the scriptures and mm-hmm. coming out of that retreat. And that was the beginning, the new beginning for us. And yeah. That was 28 years ago. And we've just step by step taken
day by day, step by step.
Yep.
No, that's good.
Yep.
Well, there's a few things I want to unpack there in that story. So, Dennis, about how old were you at this point?
38.
Yeah. You know, and that's a miracle. Right? That's a miracle in and of itself. I just was recently reading some Barna research.
Uh-huh.
And I think the number of people that actually come to where you came, like a real encounter with God after the age of 18, goes down to like 6% or something like that. It's mm-hmm. crazy. Mm-hmm. You know, the majority is like 13 to 18, something like that.
Right.
And so,
right.
I mean, God in his mercy and grace, you know, really you're like in that 6%, which is really yeah. a miracle. But what I'm going to say to our listeners, if there's anyone out there that this is really resonating with, if he can do it for Dennis, he can do it for you.
Yeah,
it's never too late. It's never too late. But the other thing I really want to really dig into is this idea of repentance and forgiveness. And, mm-hmm. you know, there is, you know, so much freedom that comes, isn't there? I mean, what would you know, you have a whole chapter in your book about the freedom that comes from repentance and forgiveness. But, you know, this was hard that you guys went through what you went through. But if we have listeners out there that possibly there's guilt and shame because of what they've done in the past, what would you say to them, Dennis? And then I would love for you to speak to that person that maybe has been really hurt along the way by a parent or a spouse or whatever, and is holding unforgiveness in their heart. I mean, what would you say on both of those spectrums?
Yeah. I think for that person in the situation where there's been a lot of hurt and pain that they've either experienced or they've caused others, to just go to them and take responsibility and say, you know, I am really sorry. I did this and I can see how it has hurt you or hurt our marriage or hurt our friendship. And I want you to know that I understand what I've done, and I was wrong, and I would like you to forgive me, and when, if now or when you can. And then I would also like you to hold me accountable as we go forward from here, to not slip back into those bad habits.
Mm-hmm.
And I just feel that's so powerful. It gives the other person permission to believe that you're new in some way. You know, repentance is a weird word because it came out of the Latin penitere. It sounds like punishment, but the Greek means to think a new way. you know, to change your thinking. And when you demonstrate to another person that you've really changed your way of thinking about what you were doing and you've noticed your behavior, it makes it so easy for them, you know, to forgive. Now, the person that's really dealing with a lot of unforgiveness, I would simply say that when you hang on to something and you are in unforgiveness towards someone, this is affecting your soul and your spirit, and it is going to bring bitterness eventually if goes on too long.
Treated.
Mm-hmm. If left undealt with.
Mm-hmm.
And when we forgive someone, we are not condoning what they did. We are not telling them that they can keep doing that. We are telling them that we are going to forgive the debt. And what we're doing is we're really just giving it to Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and he paid mm-hmm. the debt so that we can be free. And, you know, Jesus taught us if we don't forgive others, then, you know, we're going to stop being forgiven. So we're in unforgiveness is like spiritual checkmate. And mm-hmm. you really are only hurting yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And forgiveness is not for the other person. Because once they've repented, you know, they're right with God. But forgiveness is for you to mm-hmm. let that burden off of you
mm-hmm.
and to turn it over. And, you know, that sets so much freedom. Even in the meeting, you know, you'll feel a lightness come on you and you'll know that you're walking in the way of the Spirit.
Mm-hmm.
So right. That's what I would say.
And for our listeners, I want, you know, them to understand, I mean, this covers friendships. As you had said, it can cover relationships in a family. It can cover relationships in a work setting, right? Because sometimes you see that even in work settings where people hold unforgiveness towards somebody for whatever it may be, minimizing them in a meeting or undermining them or taking credit for something that they had done. You know, I mean, it can play itself out, yeah. But it's just, it's toxic, really. It's toxic. So.
Absolutely. And mm-hmm. you know, I would say some of the most dramatic moments was with my work team. Because after this happened, when I started to realize what, you know, who I had become, I took my direct reports aside one by one and I asked for forgiveness of very specific things and other people in the organization. And wow, did that ever change our work culture?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love that. Well, I want to talk, before we talk about something extra, I want to talk about your book. You've been doing some book signings and you just had your book come out. It's called The Biggest Idea Ever. I have it right here. I told you I've got it underlined and asterisks and highlights and everything, but it's The Biggest Idea Ever: Trade Anxiety, Fear, and Burnout for Peace, Purpose, and Significance. And
yeah.
that subtitle there, Dennis, I'm thinking everybody needs to go buy this book because who doesn't need more peace, purpose, and significance in their life? But, you know, how's this been for you? What really compelled you to write the book? I'd love for you to tell our listeners where they can find it. What are you hoping if listeners read your book? And this is really a spiritual and business memoir. It's really talking right. about your business, but it's also a spiritual memoir. If there was one thing that people would take away from reading your book, I'd love to know what that is too.
Yeah, thank you. The journey has been amazing. The assignment was from the Lord was to write a book about the kingdom and King Jesus for people in the marketplace who have possibly given up on church, might even consider themselves a nun, you know, in the surveys,
yes.
But who are looking for more in life. And so it is written to that person. It is therefore deliberately non-religious. I use modern translations of scripture, and I'm trying to introduce somebody to Jesus the way he introduced himself to me. And so I want it to be highly relevant to the business, you know, professional. And so it's the first part is this, my story. The second part is the story of the business people and the leaders that I got the privilege of mentoring over the last 20 years. So 2 decades at P&G, 2 decades mentoring others. So it's peppered with stories, and it is an introduction to the kingdom and to the king. And it's for those who have, you know, given up on church or Christianity or organized religion, but are, they know something's missing, which is my situation exactly. And so it was in that that vein that I wrote the book. And my hope is that, and I had I had 10 non-believing friends that read the book in its early stages, and 2 of them started following Jesus. And I knew that the message was coming through, the message that the Lord wanted me to give. And so my hope now is that, and by the way, I think the book will encourage Christians because it hopefully will give them, you know, especially if they're very oriented around church and they haven't really been oriented around kingdom. And so I'm hoping that will be the blessing for the believing reader. And then I'm hoping that it will give them words, it'll give them language to be in the marketplace with their faith. And, you know, worst case scenario, that they would gift the book to a friend that they've been praying for, a neighbor, a coworker. So that's my hope, that there would just be this joyful, you know, discovery of the kingdom.
Okay. I'm going to ask you one more question because before something extra, because you say like in advertising and in marketing, right, Dennis, it's always the biggest idea. How can we do things differently? How can we bring more value here? The biggest idea ever. You're always looking for that big idea. So what is the biggest idea ever?
Yeah. So the biggest idea ever is that the God of the universe became a human being, lived a perfect life amongst us, taught us how to live, died for our sin, rose from the grave, ascended into heaven, poured out the Holy Spirit, and promised that he's coming back to bring a new heaven and a new earth. And that our destiny is in bodies that will never decay, on a planet that is pristine, where we will invent and create and learn and grow and work and love each other forever. And it is the answer to every human dream, to every human wish, to the finest art, to the finest movies, to the finest dramas and plays, to the finest stories. It is the story. It is the idea that trumps every idea.
I love it. Well, Dennis, this is called Something Extra. Amen. What do you believe is the something extra that every leader needs?
So I believe that, Lisa, is humility. And for me, humility encompasses availability, service, vulnerability, curiosity, all coming from a settled identity. You know, the Greek terms for humble and humility had the connotation of like someone servile or lowly and were used disparagingly. Aristotle called humble people slavish and small-souled, as opposed to those he extolled as big-souled. In other words, you know, our culture sees the humble person as small-minded. You know, no wonder the language of humility strikes a bad note in the contemporary ear. You know, to many, it speaks of weakness, pliant obedience, lack of independent thought. We much prefer the individualistic maverick who did it my way. So Jesus is the one who totally redefined humility and made it the chief virtue of a follower of Jesus Christ. You know, humility is the virtue that David demonstrated when he made himself undignified as he worshiped before the Lord. It embodies self-forgetfulness, you know, the whole idea of Philippians 2. And so I was healed of selfish ambition, but my ambition now is to live and lead like Jesus, because he mm-hmm. is the greatest leader ever, because he was humble, gentle, and lowly. You know, he entered the glory of, you know, he left the glory of heaven to enter into our mess. So, mm-hmm. You know, I think one of the men I think about in this regard is one of the CEOs at P&G, John Smale. He had a fierce focus on the strategy it would take to win with consumers. He was always learning, asking questions. People who knew the consumer had his ear, regardless of their rank. So when General Motors fell apart in the 90s, he led a board initiative to replace the CEO and find people who were willing to talk to consumers. And his efforts, largely unknown, saved that company. And then when the city of Cincinnati needed a new sewer infrastructure, he gladly took on the task of bringing people together and developing a plan and then selling a tax increase. You know, he served without fanfare and he got the hard stuff done. And, you know, under his leadership, P&G moved into dozens of new countries and delivered record rates of sales and earnings growth. So to me, that's always been a great example. And there are so many others. There's so many great leaders that come to mind. But obviously the chief is Jesus. And I think it's humility.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's good. I could not agree with you more. And Jesus said, I came to serve, not to be served. You know, and sometimes it's a different mentality, right? It's flipping the thing upside down, you know, because it's not about people serving you. It's about how can you serve others? And that requires humility. So beautiful. Well, Dennis, this has been so much fun. Thank you so much for making time to be on the show today. I know that your story, I hope people will go and purchase your book, because we just scratched the surface. We scratched the surface. It's really good. So blessings to you, and good luck with everything that you're doing, and I know God's going to continue to use you.
Yeah, well, thank you so much, Lisa, and he's going to continue to use you. Thanks for telling people stories to the world, and thanks for bringing, you know, that something extra dimension to what we've been talking about. I've really enjoyed myself, and blessings on you and your family and your listeners.
Thank you for listening to today's show. Something Extra with Lisa Nichols is a Technology Partners production. Copyright Technology Partners, Inc., 2019. For show notes or to reach Lisa, visit tpi.co/podcast. Don't forget to leave a review on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or wherever you listen.